If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
We kick off with our conversations. As you know, we've been looking at different manifestos, and we today are going to be looking at the very last ones. Okay, so we are going to be speaking to Patriotic Alliance leader Gayton McKenzie in a short while. We have him already, and after that, we'll also speak to the MK Party. So this is sort of it. We're wrapping it up because we will not be doing this next week when we start the week, because there needs to be a cooling off period before the election day. So we will not be speaking about manifestos just as the week begins. So I guess this is it, right? So this is a good time for you to call in, ask your questions, 086-00-00959. If you are somebody that's been looking at the Patriotic Alliance, you've seen what they've been doing. We've had a conversation, many conversations actually, with the deputy of Patriotic Alliance, Kenny Kunene, and you sort of now have a good sense of who they are. But what we wanted to do is to really have a bigger conversation with the leader, Gayton McKenzie, so that you can ask questions about the manifesto, and maybe there are things that are not in there that we can touch on. 086-00-00959. Mr. McKenzie, very good evening to you. Thank you so much for your time. Welcome to Point of View.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Pimela. It's an absolute pleasure to be on your show.
Well, thank you. You reflect quite deeply in your manifesto on your time in government. And you start off by talking about, you know, when you started in government as a mayor, what you found. You say quite astonishing, quite a surprise. Just maybe briefly give us a sense of what was such a big surprise for you when you got into government for the first time.
Well, the biggest shock for me was when, and I want to tell the story, I'll relate the story, and then people can understand what I was trying to relate. It's the red tape. The red tape, it's just like, it's basically impossible really to, at times, deliver good quality service in a required space of time. There was a school that had, I was at a meeting in Cape Town. I got a call that the school's electricity got cut, and the children, the hostel are freezing cold. They're asking the municipality for wood, and they needed it immediately. I said no problem to the principal. We will make provision for the municipality to provide wood, and we couldn't. I had to basically take money out of my pocket and get that. The second example I want to make you is that they stole a generator, and I wanted to know from the guys, why didn't you lock the generator up? And they said no, because we were asking for a lock, and they said we must get three prices for one lock. I said the lock is like $100. They said you better. So sometimes you think the things are there to safeguard, but it's also red tape. It's also hindering proper service delivery. There's so many things I can mention in government, and also how people are just tourists. For me, this is the shocking part. People in government are basically tourists. I mean, they've got meetings, they set meetings up. There's a soccer game of Kaizer Chiefs or Orlando Pirates, before I get accused of of Orlando Pirates or whatever soccer game there's on. Then the people will say, like, let's have a meeting in that town. Or if it's the horse racing in Durban, they will then find a conference among them, you have to attend this. People go overseas in government, and this was shocking for me. People go overseas to go and learn, but they never come to implement. They never come back and say, this is what we've learned. We went on this tour. All we can show you is the pictures at Louis Vuitton overseas, the pictures at museums, but they can't basically tell you what was the main reason they got there. So when I took over as mayor, I cut a lot of things. One of the things I cut, I said, if you want to travel with your own money. And I said, I don't need a vehicle, all this excess of mayoral vehicles. The town that I'm the mayor of needs an ambulance, and you want to give me a vehicle. Now, those are the type of stuff that you see. Mayors will say, I'd rather buy a vehicle instead, and then there's ambulance. And it's not only the ANC government. I've seen it in the Western Cape. The DA leader is also doing it. You look at the town of George. Massive shortage of ambulances in a place like George, massive ambulances in a place like Cape Town, massive shortage of ambulances in a place like City of Joburg. So I'm just saying it's not just one particular party or one province.
Yeah. I mean, you make the point that if it were possible, some government officials literally will sell, and I know this is an exaggeration, will sell a paper clip for R1 million because the corruption is so, I mean, it's everywhere. It's at every level. In your view, which you address here in your manifesto, how are you going to deal with such endemic corruption?
You know, the problem is that, you know, when you have any problem in life, you must look at the size of your problem.
Yeah.
And the size of your problem will tell you what's the size of your solution required for that problem.
Mm.
That's how I live my life. I've got a small problem, a small solution, Yana, so we'll sort that problem out. But when you have a major problem, you need major solutions. And in South Africa, we have a major corruption problem. And for us as the PA, let me tell you, this country can prosper, but corruption is so enshrined in our everyday life that you have to follow the China route. You have to follow the Singapore route. In Singapore, when they took over, a minister got some gifts and he didn't
declare them.
Declared. Mm. And they gave him 30 years.
Yeah.
You got to give long sentences where the community has been harmed irreparably. By your corruption, you can hang. And that's what the PA government is saying, you know. We're going to bring hanging back. Hanging is not only for murder, but it's also for, you know, you look at, let me make an example of a corruption that is really, that I've seen with my own eyes.
Mm-hmm.
In the Free State, the people then broke the pipes.
Mm-hmm.
The government officials, they broke the water pipes and they that all the things, they didn't order the water pipes in time or the filters so that they can bring their trucks, their water trucks, the friends of their water trucks. They disadvantaged a whole community for 8 months without water. Now, that type of corruption, you got to show no mercy to it. Now, we'll give you long prison sentences, but if you must understand, if you disadvantage a community to an extent that a whole community is affected by your corruption. Surely, harsh treatment. But in South Africa, they treat corruption as a disciplinary process and not as a criminal process. You know, that's why people move from work to work. In government, it's like a whole, you are this department, this government, and then you move to that municipality because here you have a pending case and then you resign.
Mm.
But it's a criminal matter. You can't just resign. You have to face the law. But in South Africa, we treat corruption as a disciplinary offense.
Which you're speaking of, the death penalty coming back in your manifesto.
You think that, no, the death penalty, you know, for me, you know, I was a criminal, I was a gangster.
Mm.
I understand the psyche of gangsters and gang, and I was a gang boss. Now I understand the psyche of a gang boss is that the currency is killing. The currency is violence.
Mm-hmm.
And if your currency is violent, most violence that involves gangs involves killing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in South Africa, people are saying that what South Africans don't know or don't want to know is that we already have the death penalty in South Africa. We already have the death penalty against innocent people. You know, you've got 84 innocent people dying every day in this country at the hands of criminals that decide this person must die. You look at the Sasco robbery the other day. Guys could have just taken the money and then left. But no, they wanted to kill. Now, that's the death penalty. Now I'm saying you don't fight fire with words. I can promise you, fire, words can't put out the fire. You fight fire with fire. And we will bring back the death penalty because South Africa is at that point where it becomes normal for us. We are so desensitized. Where 84 people die every day. And people say, what if you hang an innocent person? what will you do, Mr. McKenzie? I said, well, I'm not going to stand here and say that possibility doesn't exist, where one innocent person can die. That possibility exists everywhere. One innocent person can spend their life. There's a lot of innocent guys in jail. So I take that argument.
Yeah.
But I'm saying that the main purpose of bringing back the death penalty is for it to be a deterrent for people not to kill people. Now, as an ex-criminal, I can tell you the death penalty is a deterrent. I can't listen to a person that's never been, for instance, doesn't even know how Dacha looks, how wheat looks. It's just lived a privileged life saying, oh, you are heartless, you want to kill innocent people. Man, innocent people are already dying. So the PA wants to bring law and order back. And you know, you look at a country like Malaysia, and you look at a country like Singapore. Singapore and Malaysia both had a death penalty. And when Malaysia brought down the crime stats, when Malaysia became a normal country where people, they then abolished again the death penalty. So Malaysia don't have the death penalty anymore, while Singapore still have it. But Malaysia, so I'm not saying it's a permanent thing.
Yes.
But now we are facing a storm here, and the storm needs to be fought with another storm.
You speak of how you really want to overhaul government, and the people that would be sitting in your cabinet will be experts in their field, even if it means these are people who are not within the Patriotic Alliance. Just elaborate on that a bit.
You know, the problem that we are having in South Africa, and I've seen that, you know, you look at educated, let's take black people, for instance, and let's take black guys that are educated. There is no interest in politics. They're only interest in education. It's very hard for that guy to get a top job because he's not affiliated.
Mm.
And if he does get a job, he will report, and he's not affiliated, he will report to a person that's affiliated to a political party. They will come tell him, chief, this is the mandate. And the guy can't really do what he did. He must do what ask politicians tell him to do. But I'm saying that coming from a corporate background, running huge businesses that I own, I know as a fact that if I sit in my boardroom, I'm probably the dumbest person in that room because I bought capacity. I go for the best guys. Profit. So I can't go and get
Mr. McKenzie?
Yeah. Hello?
I've got you back now. Go ahead.
All right. Now, I'm saying that as a person coming from the corporate world,
yes,
I understand how crucially important it is to have the best person for the job.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to get your friend to say, chief, will you run my mind for me here? You know, you are my comrade for years. And that's what we are doing in government now. We're hiring our friends. And, you know, you look at the white guys, for instance. Nobody must feel affronted when I say that the white guys are not smarter than black guys, but they had more exposure than us in the municipalities when we took over in 1994. We got rid of all the white guys. And look at all our municipalities today. Now, I'm not saying that those white guys are smarter than us, but what we should have done that time was we should have had a process and learn from them and keep them because they know what they're doing instead of getting rid of them because they are the wrong color. Under my government, I will bring an education minister that knows what he's doing, that understand you look at politicians,
yeah.
Look at most politicians.
Yeah.
If they get fired today from politics, who will hire them? Where will they... They themselves are unemployable outside the realms of politics. So I'm just saying, what we need the best guys for a job. I mean, like, for instance, now when I joined politics full time,
yes,
I had to resign from the companies, and we appointed CEOs. And I look at those guys, and I'm like, wow, they're way better than what I was as the CEO of my company.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the mindset I want to bring to politics and say, and to government and say, let's get the best. South Africa's got smart guys.
Mm.
from different colors, people, different spheres. Some of them are overseas. I mean, like, last example I want to make is that there's a guy, his name is Stan Jacobs.
Yes.
He's a colored guy I know from prison. He was a warden.
Yeah.
And he was never promoted. And I ran into him in London. I went to go and address prosecutors in London, which he arranged, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But I ran into him in London previously, and then he arranged that meeting for me. And I came back, and I went back again. And I couldn't believe in what high esteem they hold him there, and how they look at him. And he's the same guy that couldn't be promoted here in South Africa. So I'm just saying that affiliation to a political party in this country is our downfall.
You say you will be the one party that will actually be offering 100% employment to all school leavers through conscription. Just maybe talk to us about your bracket of conscription. Which ages? Is it age 17 or immediately when you leave matric?
What I've seen, I tell you, you have countries like Singapore again and Israel. The countries are going forward. I've been to Israel and I couldn't believe that I was sitting with three sisters, and I was just listening to them speaking. I mean, and my friend, a friend of mine's daughters, and they were talking about the service to the country. And the one thing that I picked up from that is that most countries that go forward, like America, like Singapore, like Israel, they use their purpose. And you know, I might get criticized for this, but we bring our youth out of school and we are teaching them already a mindset of begging, a mindset of waiting to be given, a mindset of free things. While we know deep down the world is not free, nothing is free in this world. But we are teaching our children, you're going to get Sasa. In my house, one boy that stays in the house, he's so good with his hands, and he makes clothes and stuff like that. And I then approached him because he's a relative. I said to him, man, why don't you make clothes for the party? And he made the nicest dresses for the leaders of our party. And he then said to me, I said, where's your invoice? We're going to pay you. He says, no, I don't want the money in my account. I said, why? He says, because I'm going to lose my Sasa. Now I look at him as an example, and I always use him. He's so skillful. But the mindset we've got into our youngsters, I am saying every white guy that I have met in my life, some of them got standard 4, grade 6. And they are so skillful. Then you ask him, where did you learn these things? He will tell you, at the army, sir. At the army, sir. I've got probably 20 of them working for me at my mind. And these guys are so skillful. And all of them learn that skill at the army. I am saying, 2 years of your life to give back to your country. Also, it's not only to go and shoot people there, but to learn a skill, to understand that you work for your money. When they come back from the army, they are ultimate gentlemen. They've been set up. And it is just something I think our youth need. Because at the moment, they get picked up by gangsters. They get picked up by nyaupe dealers. Instead of us picking up our children and say, 2 years of your life, you can choose. You want to study first or you want to do your service. But we owe it to South Africa. It makes them also more patriotic towards the country.
Mr. Gator McKenzie is our guest. He's the leader of the Patriotic Alliance, and we're going through their manifesto, and he is on the line with us this evening. And you can also give us a call, 086-000-0959, if you want to ask him a question. Mr. McKenzie, thanks again for staying with us. You want to deal with the brain drain. How are we going to get all these people back?
Well, you know what, the only way to get, I think, to get the people back to South Africa is, let's fix load shedding. Let's fix the thing of discrimination in the workplace. The thing that made them leave. You know, every South African that's abroad wants to come back. South Africa is a different country, the best country in the world to live in. We've got the best weather. And arguably, we got the best weather in the world because everybody wants to come back home. And the cost of living is not so cheap to live overseas. You can, if you're used to a certain lifestyle here. So in order to get them back, I just think we need to create the atmosphere, we need to create the climate for them to come back, the things that made them leave in the first place. We need to be honest about that. We need to sit down with them and say, why did you leave? And what will make you come back? Once you have those two questions, then you know what you need to do.
You are speaking of aligning the two economies. It's not really new, but explain what you are thinking around aligning two economies.
I'm sorry, I need you the question.
I'm saying you speak about aligning and integrating the two economies, and I just want you to explain what that means.
Well, basically, you know, there are different ways you can look at aligning the different economies. Mm. And people look at it differently, but I tell you, the one part of it is that in South Africa, you know, there's a debate going on at the moment where they speak about the township economy. Mm-hmm. There's a big debate in South Africa at the moment about the township economy, spaza shops. Mm. Some people say we want to take back the spaza shops. We are part of those people that say that. Other people are saying, we want to go after the mines and stuff like that. Now, people that say you want to go after the mines, it's a clear thing that we are addressing here to say, when you open any business, there's only one reason why people open businesses, not two reasons. It is for profit. Now, profit is the same whether it comes from the mining industry, whether it comes from the industry, the sponsorship industry. Now, aligning the different economies in South Africa, as you have an economy that is supposedly only for black people. Then you have a middle-class economy. But what we are saying is let us empower all our people. And when I went to China, for instance, I'll make you an example with China. Mm-hmm. I wanted to open a business in China, and the Chinese came to me and they said, you have qualified for everything, but we're not going to give you this address. We'll give you a different address. Simply because we are protecting this industry. We're keeping it for the locals because it's a busy intersection. Mm. So thereby, they are growing they're growing their own citizens to own blue-chip companies. But in South Africa, if you sell quotas, you are going to remain selling quotas until you die. Now, what we need to do, we need to safeguard, we need to say the tax shop industry must only be South African. Mm. By doing that, you are giving people a chance to go to the next level of economy. Mm. Because you cannot live in a country where a certain economy is only for certain people. And we are saying as the PA, let's align the economy through legislation. Really protect your people. Mm. Protect your people. Protect the... You can't have government guys, CIPO in Soweto, mm-hmm. competing with Bidvest. And that's exactly what's happening at the moment in South Africa.
Yeah.
And so people will never get to the level of Bidvest.
Mr. McKenzie, we've got a call coming through. It's Lindo coming, calling us from Boksburg. A very good evening, Lindo. Thank you for calling. Hello. All right, let me just give Lindo a moment. He'll come back to us in a short while. I want us to touch on housing, Mr. McKenzie. It's a problem. We've got massive backlog. Your immediate solution to housing?
You know, my immediate solution to housing is that we have to deport all these illegal foreigners. And people don't understand that. These people are not staying in the air. They are staying in Hubro. They are staying in Sunnyside. They are staying in Randburg now. Now, most of them are not even paying rent. Most of them are not. Now, if you have, some people say we've got 15 million. Some people say we've got 5 million of them. So let me go to 10 million. If we have 10 million illegal foreigners in this country, that stays, that got a place to stay, that already alleviates part of the housing problem. And then the second one is that you got to use housing to create jobs. Why don't you go on a massive and intentional housing drive? A massive and intentional housing drive that we've got a backlog of 600,000 houses, for instance, in the Western Cape. Once the Western Cape government can say, this is our priority area for the next 6 months, we're going to go. You solve so many problems with that. You solve the problem of unemployment. You solve the problem of people that are semi-skilled. You can now skill them majorly. So I'm just saying that our government say we got a problem, and then they go back and they have a next meeting. We have a problem. Hey, that problem became bigger. Let us ring fence the problems and say, for the next 6 months, this is what we are going to work on. And this is what we are going to work on. The Chinese did that very successfully. Very successfully. They had a problem where rural people in rural China were moving to urban areas. And there wasn't enough housing. And they then intentionally said, we are going to set out now and go and build apartments to alleviate the housing problem. I just think that we are very lackluster when it comes to a problem. You know, the example I make you. When I became the mayor of Central Karoo, for 30 years, both the ANC and the DA has been talking about removing the bucket system from the municipality. It's a problem. I can take you through all the minutes of every new government they used to interchange DA ANC.
Yeah.
And they would, and nobody just said, let's do it now. So what we will do, we'll come in and we'll say, let's do it now.
Lindo is calling us from Boksburg. Lindo, thanks for calling. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening.
Good evening. Welcome to Point of View. Go ahead, sir.
Good evening. You're speaking to Pastor Dingo Olsen from Cape Town, South Africa. I just want to ask my president, Clayton McKenzie, a question. First of all, I want to say thank you, team, for doing what it's doing for the country, not just for the Western Cape or the Central Karoo where he was at. But I want to say thank you for everything that he has been doing for our people. And my question that I want to ask is, President Gaetan McKenzie, when it comes to people that are trapped in drug addiction and alcohol abuse, what will be the Patriotic Alliance stance when it comes to assisting those people that are trapped? Because, you know, as an ex-offender, people are getting opportunities in prison and they are there for free, if I may call it that. But when it comes to people that are trapped in drug addiction, there's always long waiting lists for people to be helped. And if not, so then the rehabs, they are very, very expensive. Mm-hmm. What will be the way for the Patriotic Alliance going forward when it comes to people trapped in drug addiction? That's one. Number two is, I personally, I'm a prison warder at Portsmouth for the past 27 years. Mm-hmm. And I want to say to you, sir, you have done exceptionally well. Transforming from an ex-offender to where you are currently today running for the president of South Africa. That is something that anybody should be proud of. Now, I want to ask you, sir, what will be the way forward when it comes to all those that have never received promotion? Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier on about the one guy, Mr. Stan Jacobs. Mm-hmm. What would you do as a Patriotic Alliance when it comes to people that have studied, they do have the qualifications, they have long services, but have not gotten the opportunity to get promotion because of back then we were not white enough, and now as a colored people we are not black enough. What will be the stance for the Patriotic Alliance, sir?
Mr. McKenzie?
Thank you very much, Ms. Olsen. Here's the first thing. Drug selling is a business. But what has also become a business in South Africa, it is helping drug addicts. It's now a fully fledged business, you know, where people that are tired of selling drugs are now also in the business of rehab. The very same people selling drugs got rehab centers. It might sound ridiculous, but that's a fact I'm telling you. Now, once you take out the
just,
second
just maybe take us through that. You're saying the very same people that are selling drugs are now in the business of rehabs.
Yes, what they're doing is that.
Wow. Mr. McKenzie?
If you are addicted to drugs,
yes.
In South Africa.
Yes.
If you are addicted to drugs,
mm-hmm.
It's going to cost your family 5,000 rands too.
Yes.
For you to, per month for yeah. recovery.
Yes.
And government is giving subsidies to certain houses, yeah. certain
yes.
Rehabilitation centers.
Yeah.
So what the drug people are doing is that they are also in their business of rehab, of drug rehab centers. So they are basically the sausage machine.
Sure.
They will make you addicted to drugs, and then they will get money from their side, and they'll and then they'll get money from the other side also. So they'll never run out of customers because they are on both sides of it. I mean, like they benefit from the headache and they benefit from the headache tablet, for lack of a better word. Example. So what I will what I'll be doing is very clear. Is that government? One of our most serious problems in this country is drug addiction. It's serious. Drug dealing is even more serious. Now, in the Philippines, and I like to make examples of countries. It wasn't pink, I just in Philippines they had a 60-something% youth addiction, addicted to drugs. All the youth. And when Duterte came in, he said, listen, we are going to deal with all the drug dealers. He gave them long sentences. They killed some of them. They hanged them. But he gave them long sentences, and he fought drugs. And what he did was the people that addicted to drugs, he then took them on a serious rehab paid for by the state. And those guys will work during the day. And at night, they will so they'll basically pay for their own rehab, which I just thought is brilliant. You understand? I think it's a brilliant idea.
So, Mr. McKenzie, help me out. Those who do get long sentences, I mean, what we are hearing, and of course, I'm not very familiar with how it works, but what we're hearing is that those who get long sentences anyway, the trade continues even from inside the prison. How would you mitigate against that?
Yes, no, it does continue. That's not what you heard. It's actually... So what I'm saying is that prison in its current form will change under my government. Number one, you can't have people watching TV the whole day. That one, I was in jail watching TV the whole day. You can't have that nonsense. You know, if you have a child outside, in jail, like I had a child outside when I was in jail, then the lady that had a child was, she would claim from the welfare. And I just need to sign that I'm really in jail, I can't provide for my child. Now, that nonsense will come to an end because prisoners are even accepting children that's not theirs. Ladies that will come and say, but say you are the father. And then they share the money. Now, I'm saying prisoners must work. Look at how dirty South Africa is. Wardens are also working hard, but there's some that sit the whole day just looking at a prisoner, opening the whole day, working with keys. We're going to change that, and we're going to say, come, the truck, today you were clean the field. Today, look at the linen in Baragwanath Hospital. The linen is forever dirty. People are complaining on Facebook and Twitter. And I can't say it's a fact, but I just saw on social media. Let them come and do the laundry. Let them come and do that. You must pay, you must repay your debt to society, but not for free. Then government, for the work that you do, government will give you a stipend which they will force safe. They will force you to save that money. They'll save it on your behalf. So when you go out of jail, you then have a start. Like if you save 10,000 rand, you can then start a car wash, for instance, again, when you come out of jail. Because 96% of prisoners go back to jail because there's no support structure for them. So I'm just saying that here's the uncomfortable truth of tonight's interview. South Africans don't want to accept that we need a total overhaul of how we know life in South Africa. We need law and order to come back. We need to make sure that people... I mean, look at a simple thing I can tell you. Girls get pregnant. We government spend 2 billion rand a year on condoms. And when the children don't use the condoms and they get pregnant, government reward them. That's why you have a lot of girls under the age of 24 having 3-4 kids, because that's the only income they can get by making children. They leave the kids by their grandmothers. These things, we read on the floor, on the ground. You see these things. Now I'm saying, can government just flip the script and say, let me give 200 instead of 500 to every 13-year-old that's not falling pregnant until she's 21? There might be some motivation, because at the moment, there's a motivation to fall pregnant. Now, these are not conversations people are ready to have, but it's conversations that we should be having. People are just shooting people. People kill you now for a cell phone. These are conversations. I want to bring back law and order, and that's why I'm running. I want to bring back, I want to reset. South Africa has become a jumping castle of illegal foreigners. I want to make sure that I deport them. We deal with our own criminals here. which will be a handful compared to now, it's a whole stadium full of cannabis we have to deal with.
I've got one last quick call from Mongani, who before we wrap. Mongani, thanks for calling. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Pamela, and good evening to Gaitin. The quick one is that Gaitin is focusing mostly in the effect that is affecting nation as a whole. However, I'm keep on wondering of when he claims that he'll deal with foreigns and stuff, and now he'll be so that he, after cleaning the foreign nationals in South Africa, and then that's when he can focus on the local criminals, whereby he's suppressing the crime in South Africa. So my question is one, if he failed himself to reduce crime in El Dorado, where his party is dominating mostly, how capable will he deal with the crime that is surrounding South Africa as a whole? Because of El Dorado is just a small space area where he can still focus on and deal with that, so that we can be seen that he's capable of dealing with the entire crime that is affecting South Africa. Number two, his party, I've got two people that are staying close to my place where they were in his party, and they moved from his party and moved to Action SA. Both of them, they're complaining with that. That party of Gaitin is so racist, and whatever that the black child is saying, they are part, if you're not a colored, they're not going to hear from you. That is why they left the party, because they're always being suppressed. So how is he going to assure people that even if you're not colored, you're going to benefit from my party?
Thanks, Bogani. We've got to go quickly. Mr. McKenzie?
Yeah, quickly. Number one, you see, when you come to the radio, you must come being very well informed and not come and display how unwell informed you are. Number one, we've got more black premier candidates than colored premier candidates. Our deputy president of this party is black. The head of marketing is black. Our MEC's got so many black members. Now, you can't tell me, how can I be a racist? I mean, really. Now I must now tell two people that stay next to you, you are listening too much to street gossip. But the second point, let me come to El Dorado Park. What do you mean, are we in charge of El Dorado Park? We have one council, two councillors in El Dorado Park. That is not government. We are talking government matters here. You are talking floor matters of councillors. A councillor is not even fully in charge of the ward. A councillor can't take all the decisions in the ward. We are talking national government. You are talking about councillors. El Dorado Park is not a country. Now, this thing where you talk about PA being a racist party, PA is the only party that has all races in its NHC. No, don't, what you're talking, that thing does not exist. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Mr. McKenzie, we're going to wrap it up. Why should people vote for you?
Let me tell you something. I'm asking only, you've given the ANC 30 years, you've given the DA 15 years. I'm asking for 2 years to show you guys, you know, I'm a change agent. I mean, I've done it in my life. I went to Central Karoo. I've been the best mayor this country has ever seen. I've managed to effect changes in 100 days. So if people want to see real changes, and for me, this is not, politics is not a matter of life and death, that I have to get the job. Mm-hmm. I have already been successful in my own right. I've got commercial sense. I come from the street. I understand how to deal with mafias. I understand how to deal with gangsters. I understand the corporate world. I've been CEO of a listed company. So basically, I'm your guy, and I'm a no-nonsense guy. And now, South Africa doesn't need a soft end now. We need a guy that will come in and fix things, and then you can get your softie after me. Thank you very much.
Patriotic Alliance leader Gaitin McKenzie, thanks very much for your time. When I come back, we're going to be talking to the MK Party.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.